John chapter 12, verse 1. Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. Then they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, Why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief, and had the bag, and bare what was put therein. Then said Jesus, Let her alone. Against the day of my burying she has kept this. For the poor always you have with you, but me you have not always. Much people of the Jews therefore knew that he was there, and they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death, because that by reason of him many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus. Chapter 12, verse 1. Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover. So when? Then. When was then? 6 days before the Passover. Now this is 6 days before Jesus was crucified. 6 days before the Passover feast of the Jews. Jesus came to Bethany. Again, Bethany, there's Jerusalem, there's the temple. You walk out the eastern gate of the temple where the temple was. Down the slope, it's this little tiny slope. You start going up that slope, and that's where the Garden of Gethsemane is, where Jesus always hung out. One of his favorite spots to hang out. You go to the top of where the Garden of Gethsemane was, or is today still. You go up to the top of that hill. It's on a mountain. It's a hill. And that's the top. That's the Mount of Olives. You go down the back side of the Mount of Olives, away from there's the temple, Kidron Valley, Garden of Gethsemane, Mount of Olives, and right on the back side of the Mount of Olives, you go down that hill, and there's Bethany. Just over a mile. So it's just a good little walk from Bethany to Jerusalem. Now in Bethany, that's where Lazarus lived. Remember a couple weeks ago, we talked about Lazarus who died. Jesus came and he rose him from the dead. Remember that? Hey, roll the stone away. No, we're not going to roll the stone away because he's been in there 4 days and he stinks. His body's bloated. He's turned into jelly. There's no way we're opening that stone. We're not moving the stone out of the way. That's impossible. You can't do it. Because remember what Jesus asked earlier. Do you believe this? Do you believe that I am the resurrection? That I am the life? If you do believe, if someone says around you they believe in Jesus, how do you know if they really believe or not? Jesus will ask them, Jesus asks us today, to do the impossible. Roll the stone away then. If you believe me, then roll the stone away. You'll do what God asks you to do. You'll be obedient to do what Jesus asks you to do in His Word. And what does He say? Jesus says, if you love me, if you really do love me, then you're going to keep my commandments. So how do you know someone believes? Someone who does what Jesus asked them to do. They don't fight. They don't run the other way. They don't complain. Well, you might complain a little bit. They don't argue to the point of disobedience. They might say, yeah, but Lord, how's that going to happen? That's impossible. He's been dead 4 days. He stinks. He's rotted. Nevertheless, I will roll the stone away. Their actions are going to back up their belief. Someone says they believe in God. James says the demons believe, and they're one up on you because they're actually scared. You and I aren't scared. Well, I believe in God. Well, where's the fear? Because if you really knew who God was, you really knew who God, what God was capable of doing. So Jesus said, don't fear man who can kill your body, and after that they can't touch you. That's all they can do to you is kill your body. Jesus says, I'll tell you who you should fear. Fear the one who, after he has killed your body, he can also take your soul and cast it into hell. That's the proper, now again, it's not like this, I'll tell you who you should fear. Jesus wasn't talking like that. He's not yelling, he's not smacking you around with the back of his hand. He's saying, look, I'm telling you, don't fear man who can just kill your body. And after that, they got nothing to do. They can't do anything to you. I'll tell you who you should fear. I'll tell you who you should reverence, who you should respect. He's not the man upstairs. He's not your buddy. He's God, the one who gave you life, which we're going to look at in a little bit. God showed me some stuff yesterday. It was just blowing me away. I'm still this morning. But we'll get there. Jesus came to Bethany 6 days before the Passover, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. Something else you're going to notice as you go through here. Notice who the focus is on. Now, I've thought about this passage. I've read this passage a number of times. I've thought about it. I'm sure I've shared on it. I've taught on it. But again, the Lord's helping me to look at something a little bit different in this passage, and it kind of affects the entire Bible. Because who's the object of these 11 verses? It tells you the second word right there in chapter 12. Then Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus was. You think Lazarus would be the subject, right? This was the guy, come and see the man who was dead and rotted in the grave 4 days, turned to jelly, and now he's alive. Right? So they'd have like the Bethany Circus, you know, the traveling Bethany Circus. Come see Lazarus, you know, pay your shekel, and come on in the tent, and every half hour, you're going to see the guy who was dead, and now he's alive. The jelly man, you know, whatever. That's not the object, that's not the subject of this entire passage. It's not the subject or the object of the entire Bible. How does the Bible start? In the beginning, God. How does chapter 12 start? Then, Jesus. He came to Bethany 6 days before the Passover. And where did he go? He came to Bethany. Okay, who came to Bethany? Jesus, he came to Bethany, to Lazarus' house, who was dead, whom he had raised from the dead. Oh, so it's not Lazarus. He's not, I mean, yeah, Lazarus is there, and yeah, it's amazing, it's miraculous. It's Jesus. He's the one who's coming. He's the one who raised Lazarus from the dead. Verse 2. There they made him a supper. Who, Lazarus? The guy who was dead? The jelly man? No, they made Jesus a supper. They put a dinner on for Jesus in honor of Jesus. Because Jesus had come to Bethany, where Lazarus was, the guy who was dead that Jesus raised to life. And Martha served. But Lazarus was one of them. So he's just one face in a crowd. Lazarus is just one of the people that sat at the table. What are those last two words? With him. Oh yeah, Lazarus is there. But he was just one of many, you know. Martha was serving. Oh sure, Lazarus was there. But the dinner was for Jesus. And they all sat with Jesus. It's not the opposite. It's not the other way around. It doesn't say that Jesus came and sat at the table with Lazarus, who was dead, who was raised to life. It says Lazarus, the guy who Jesus raised to life, came and sat at this dinner that was in his own, think about it, it's in his own house. He's the man of the house. And the dinner wasn't even for him. It's for Jesus, who raised Lazarus back to life. And they're all sitting there. Lazarus is just one face in a crowd who is sitting there with Jesus. Verse 3. So they're all sitting at dinner. And you all know how they used to eat at the table, right? They didn't sit in chairs. The tables were about this high off the ground, like a foot, foot and a half. And everybody kind of leaned back on their left elbow on pillows that were all lining around the table. They would lean with their left arm on the ground, supporting themselves with their feet going out away from the table, kind of at an angle. And everybody would kind of just lay around the table like that all the way around. And you reach over on the table, you didn't have a fork, you didn't have a knife, you'd reach over with your hands and you'd just pick and eat. Everybody dipping out of the same bowl, double dipping, everything. And they're all laying there, and they're all talking, and this is the setting. Now picture it. It's not just Jesus and Lazarus and Mary and Martha. Because verse 9 told us, much people of the Jews therefore knew that it was there, and they came. Not just because Jesus was there, but they also wanted to see Lazarus, the jelly man. They wanted to see this, they had heard about it, and they had, some of them knew Lazarus. They had to see for themselves. Is he really alive? Is it really him? So there was a whole slew of people there. Lazarus was just one face in the crowd. Plus, Jesus had his 12 disciples. But when Jesus went around, he didn't just have the 12 disciples with him. Jesus also had a whole group of women that followed with them, women that Jesus had delivered and set free. Former prostitutes, former drug users, former witch, you know, sorceresses and witches and all this other stuff, Jesus delivered. And they went around and followed Jesus everywhere he and his disciples went. You can read about this in Luke 7 and 8. And they ministered to Jesus everywhere he went out of their own substance. They gave of their own livelihood to provide for Jesus. They cooked, they cleaned, they did the sewing, they did all the stuff that women did back then. They took care of everything so Jesus could focus on what the Lord had given him to do. They were there too. Plus there was tons of Jews there from Jerusalem. Passover's going on 6 days away. There's at least a million people in Jerusalem, a city that you can walk around in 2.5 hours. The walled city is about this big. Probably about this, a little bit bigger. You can walk around it in a few hours on top of the wall. And there's a million plus in the city and around the city, on the hills surrounding it. It's just tents everywhere. So the setting, again, a lot of these houses, their weather there in Israel is almost exactly like it is here. It's almost exactly the same as here. They're able to grow citrus and avocado. They grow the same things we grow here. The weather's exactly the same almost. And so back then, people would have, instead of a dining room, they'd have like a patio or a veranda. Kind of a something over the top, like a patio cover. And they have a table out there, low-lying walls, so that everybody could come around and kind of just lean on the wall and see who's eating dinner over here, because they'd invite a bunch of people so everybody could just come up and hang out. Who's who, and hey, there's so-and-so, and hey, how's it going? Totally open. So there's a whole crowd of people around this whole place. This is the setting. Sometime during the dinner, the supper given for Jesus, who was the guest of honor, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus' sister, gets up and walks out. And everybody's probably like, oh, she's probably just going to get something. But again, remember, it was peculiar Because John said it was Martha who was serving. So then he notes, hey, Mary just got up. Well, that's weird, because Martha's the one who's serving everybody. Verse 3, then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Whatever this was, the substance, King James says ointment of spikenard, like a perfume. Other places in Scripture, in the Gospels, they talk about this situation where Mary comes and she has this ceramic, it's not glass, it's a ceramic container holding this precious ointment. And John even points out it's very costly. We find out how much. Judas says, hey, why don't you take this and sell it for 300 pence or 300 denarii, 300 days' wages. And so if an average salary, like in Escondido, I think the median income is like around $45,000 a year. So Judas says, basically, hey, why'd you pour it out on his feet? How come he didn't take it and sell it for 30 grand? That's how much it's worth. So this isn't just very costly, like 300 bucks for a little bottle. This is $30,000. For this entire ceramic container, which was sealed completely. Mary wasn't married. I can tell you that because this little ceramic thing she has of this costly ointment or perfume was her inheritance. It is something that is passed down from grandmother to mother to daughter to granddaughter to great-granddaughter, and it just goes through the entire family. If your husband ever dies, because women couldn't work back then, you couldn't own anything back then, and so if something happened and you have no way of providing for yourself, take this and sell it. Generation to generation to generation, and all it's doing is increasing in value. She gets up. Now think about it. What made Mary get up and she left and she goes and she grabs this ceramic jar, which is her, it's not just her livelihood, it's her future. She has no idea what tomorrow holds. None. Lazarus could die again. Martha could die, the house could fall, she could get burned and, you know, whatever, and die in the kitchen, and who knows what's going to happen. She would have no way of providing for herself tomorrow, so what does she do? She goes and she gets everything, pretty much, so you could say that. Everything, her whole future, her whole life, is wrapped up in this ceramic jar. She takes it, and once you break it open, you can't put it back together. And she breaks it open, again, she comes back in. People know what this is. She walks back out, and remember the crowd that's all around, plus the people at dinner. She walks right over. Remember, Jesus is reclining at the table, his feet laying out. She comes up behind him, breaks this thing open, and pours it all over his feet. And you can, maybe you can't, try to imagine the shock of everybody that's there. Utter shock, disbelief. Crazy thoughts about crazy Mary. I mean, this is psychotic. Hey, I know Jesus is cool. I know he raised your brother from the dead. But this is ridiculous. Because what about tomorrow, Mary? What about next year, Mary? How are you going to make it? What if your brother dies again? Who's going to take care of you? Think about it. Mary is reclining at this table, and she probably had a she was either right next to, right behind, or sitting somewhere, reclining somewhere, or she had a direct bead on Jesus. And the whole time, she's sitting there, and she's just locked in on Jesus. And she looked at him, she's thinking about him, she's thinking about just the radical things Jesus has done in her life, the radical things Jesus has done in her brother's life, even raising him from the dead. Totally blown away. And one can only imagine what was going through Mary's heart. What was going through Mary's mind. As she's sitting there looking physically at Jesus. Her mind just racing. Thinking, man, there's no way. I cannot believe. But I do believe because he's sitting right here. I've seen it. Watching God do the impossible through His Son. I mean, He's here in the flesh. And when you come up against, if you take some time, I'm convinced, if you would just take some time to stop and look to Jesus and consider Jesus and think about what Jesus has done for you. Look at the things Jesus has done for the people around you. And you spend some time reclining, spend some time looking at Jesus, considering Jesus, thinking about Jesus, the things Jesus does, the things Jesus says. If you're stewing it for a few days, and then all of a sudden you have that encounter, and he's there, and you're there, and it's not going to take that long for you to get up and do something ridiculous. Ridiculous in everybody else's eyes. Mary, who could have been a shy girl, because you think when Lazarus was dead and in the tomb, and Jesus shows up, Martha's the first one to run out there. Where'd Mary stay? Mary stayed in the house. Stayed in her room. But when Jesus comes, Martha comes back and says and whispers in her ear, hey, Jesus is here, he wants to see you. Then she runs out to him. And she doesn't stand up and go, oh, Jesus! You know, and wrap her arms around him and cry on his shoulder. She hunches into a ball on the ground like she's trying to hide. But here she is now in the midst of a crowd, and what happens? She doesn't even care about the crowd. She gets up, she goes over to her room, to the cabinet or whatever, and she pulls that thing out with no thought of, this is mine. I got to hold on to it. I'm going to use it for myself someday. She doesn't do that. She is totally consumed with Jesus. With pouring out. She's trying to think, how can I pour out my heart? How can I pour out my love, my adoration, my worship, my honor? I mean, we're just giving them a dinner. That's nothing. I mean, it's something, but it's nothing. Nothing is too valuable that cannot be poured out upon Jesus. And so her mind is racing, her heart is beating in her chest. She's thinking, what can I do to show him that I am totally, completely committed? Not only do I believe, I worship him. I literally worship the ground he walks on. What can I do? Because nothing, a dinner's not going to do it. There's nothing so precious that cannot be poured out upon the feet of Jesus. And so her mind, and then she reminds herself, she runs in her room, she gets up from dinner, no thought of anybody else around her because she's totally locked in on Jesus. Her thoughts are consumed with Jesus. How can I show Jesus? Not that I just believe him, or say with my mouth I believe him. how can my life, how can I show them? And she goes out and she runs and grabs that ceramic jar. She comes out, she breaks it and pours it out. She's not doing it like a show of like, hey, look at me and how much I love Jesus. She took her whole life, her whole future, broke it, and dumped it out on his feet. On his feet. You think she would have poured it out on his head. Seriously, that's how they anointed people in the Old Testament. That whole culture. People came under your house, you were to provide perfume or something because no one had Old Spice, you know. They didn't wear deodorant, so they walked into the house and you would have water to wash their feet, water to wash their hands, and then you would provide some kind of a fragrant something just to like, they could just like put on themselves as they came in. A blessing. And so you think Mary would have come out and taken this, I mean, $30,000 an inheritance, her whole life, her future, everything, and she pours it out on his feet. He's going to walk out in a couple hours and get them all dirty again. And have to wash his feet again. That's ridiculous. She doesn't pour it out on his head, she pours it out on his feet. Again, she's just caught up in how can I show Jesus by my actions? Again, not that I just believe him, but that I'm sold down the river for him. There's no hope of me ever going back. What does she do to prove it? She takes everything and breaks it. It's no good anymore. Now you got to use it. How are you going to use it? You can't sell it. And she pours it all out on his feet. Then she kind of realizes what she's done as that last drop pours out. She probably threw the thing down on the ground. What does she do? Run out of the room? No, she doesn't. She realizes, probably just like, oh man, I poured it out on his feet. What am I doing? I poured it out on his feet. And she drops to her knees and takes her hair and starts to wipe his feet with her hair. Maybe thinking that I could mop it up and I put it on his hair, you know, his face or his clothes, something. But then it's like, I kind of get this picture of taking honey, a little bit more liquid, but really thick. She busts this thing open, and she pours it on his feet. It's like, all over his feet. Whereas you'd probably just take, I mean, it's $30,000 worth. But you'd probably just dip your fingers in and kind of just like, woo, you know, that's enough. She dumps it on him, and she's like, oh, what am I mean, oh no, I dumped everything. I poured out everything on Jesus. Now what am I going to do? She drops to her knees and starts wiping his feet with her hair, trying to clean him off a little bit. Feeling a little foolish, maybe. You guys kind of get the picture? You ever been around someone who puts on a little bit too much perfume or a little bit too much cologne, where you're just kind of like, they leave the room and 20 minutes later you walk back in and you just feel like a cloud and you're just like, man, what's wrong? It's too much. What are you doing? And that's just like a little tiny bottle. It's like, you know, whatever. And then it lingers, right? She takes the whole thing and just dumps it out. Then she takes her hair and starts mopping it up. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Probably not just the house, probably it was everywhere. I mean, it was like, I mean, you think people had to stop eating. Because there's this little thing going on. Mary gets up, and they're like, oh, I wonder where Mary's going. Oh, she comes back in, and they're like, well, what she got that for? boom, she breaks it, oh, and everything stops. Then she pours it all out, and then she realizes, maybe for a second, oh, what have I done? She drops to her knees, starts wiping his feet. And the whole entire house is filled with the fragrance of that perfume. To me, it's a picture of, I got this like this little thing going through my head, the costly fragrance of humility. The costly fragrance of humility. To humble yourself, to get to that place where you're on your knees at the feet of Jesus, is going to cost you. And the cost is everything. It's everything. Jesus said, you're either for me or you're against me. It's all or nothing. It's not one fist in the gold and one fist in the gutter. It's not one hand on Jesus and one hand on the world. Like we sang the last couple weeks, I've decided to follow Jesus, no turning back, no turning back. The cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back, no turning back. Though none go with me, still I will follow, no turning back, no turning back. Jesus says, take your hands, put them on the plow, and don't look back. If you do look back, you're not fit for the kingdom of God. It's one or the other. You can't have both. Can't. It's all or nothing. You've either decided to follow Jesus or you haven't. The cross is before you and the world's behind you, or it's not. Or else it's the opposite. Either the world's before you and the cross is behind you. Or you're more concerned about your friends going with you rather than you going on alone, even if nobody goes with you. Have you decided? That's what this is, the picture of. You got to humble yourself. God's word says, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God. And in due time, He will lift you up. In His time, He'll lift you up. Lift yourself up under the mighty hand of God, and guess what's going to happen? It's going to fall on you like that stone, Jesus said, and it's going to grind you to powder. There's no remedy for the person that lifts himself up against God. There's no remedy. So either you humble yourself under the mighty hand of God and He will exalt you, He will lift you up in His time, or lift yourself up and He'll grind you to powder. To humble yourself is going to cost you everything. But when you give up everything, people around you, and even your own mind, is going to say exactly what happened in verse 4 and 5. Then said one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which is going to betray him. So here's Judas, the one who's going to betray Jesus. He looks at this whole scene. It's dead quiet, you know it is. And Judas Iscariot speaks up, and what does he say? Why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? Hey, hold on a second. One of the other Gospels says that Judas said, hey, why this waste? Why is she wasting that? That could have been sold for 30 grand and he could have given it to the poor. And here you are in this ridiculous display of affection for Jesus and you just dump it all on his feet. At least you could have done is dump it on his head. What's wrong with you, Mary? Why this waste? Again, you decide to humble yourself under the hand of God, the mighty hand of God, guess what's going to happen? Because it's costly, it's going to cost you everything, but it's going to be fragrant. And it's going to fill the house. It's going to be the fragrance of life leading other people to life. That's the result. You humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. You give up. You surrender. And guess what's going to happen? It's going to cost you everything, but it's going to be so fragrant that life is going to be poured into you, which you didn't have before. Now it's going to be overflowing you, and everybody else around you is going to start tasting of that life and coming alive themselves. It's going to be the fragrance of life leading other people to life. Life in Jesus. Why wasn't this sold and given to the poor? Look what John adds a little commentary here. Verse 6. This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and he had the money bag and he took what was put therein. Judas was voted by the rest of the disciples most likely to succeed in life. Judas was the popular guy. He was the next guy in line. He was the guy Jesus put in charge of carrying the money for everybody. Anybody donated? Anybody gave to Jesus? Jesus came to Judas and put it in his hand. Here you go. And Judas put it in the bag. Except he had a bag with a hole inside of it, which went into his pocket. Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, didn't say, hey, why wasn't this sold and given to the poor? Because he cared about the poor. He wanted it to be put into the money bag. Because he was dipping in and using that money on himself, on his own pleasures, to satisfy his own greed, his own lust. Judas Iscariot was a thief who had the money bag and he took what he wanted out of that bag to use it on his own desires and his own pleasures. And you and I are just like Judas. You are Judas Iscariot in a form of speaking. Because you and I all have a bag. You and I all have a money bag, so to speak. Paul says in Corinthians, Paul says in Corinthians that we have a treasure, talking about Christians, people that follow Jesus, we have a treasure in earthen vessels. You've been given His life, the Spirit of God. He now lives in you if you're following Jesus. And He's the treasure. This is just an earthen bag, earthen vessel. Jesus has made each and every single one of you, He's chosen each and every single one of you to be the money guy, the money lady. You're the one that carries the money around. Each and every single one of you are. He has given you a treasure, and He's given you a bag to carry it around. All this is a bag of skin and bones. And God's given you the gift of life. And so the question I have for you, because it's the question God asked me last night, are you a thief? Oh, it's easy to point the finger at Judas because he put the finger on Jesus. Because he was greedy. And here he is bagging on Mary. Hey, why this waste? This should have been sold and put in the money bag. You should have given it to me so we can give it to the poor. Judas was a thief. He didn't care anything about the poor people around him. And believe me, you and I both know the people all sitting around you are poor. They're needy. And I'm not talking about physical poor. I'm not talking about financial poverty. What I'm talking about is spiritual poverty. Are you a thief? Are you using not only the money, are you using the money, are you using the life that God has given you, that God has put into your bag, are you using it for your own pleasures? Are you using your life to satisfy your own lusts? To do what you want to do? How are you using the life or the money God's given you? Jesus tells it like this. He's got all these people, these servants. There's a king, he had some servants. He gave each one a measure of money. One he gave 5 talents, one he gave 2 talents, one he gave 1. He says, I'm going away to get my kingdom, and I'm going to come back, and I'll check up on you. I'm going to come back. Goes away. The guy with 5 goes and invests it. He gains 5 more. The guy with 2 goes and invests it, puts it to use. He gains 2 more. The guy with 1 goes and digs a hole, buries it, hides it, doesn't tell anybody. Comes back, he's a king now, and he goes, hey, I got my kingdom. He calls those 3 guys before him. The one with the 5, what did you do with the 5 talents I gave you? What did you do with the money I gave you? Oh, I put it to use, and I got 5 more. Here, it's yours. Hey, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Enter into the kingdom. The guy with 2, what did you do with the 2? I put it to use, I gained 2 more. Here, it's yours. Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Enter into the kingdom. The guy with 1, what'd you do with the 1 talent I gave you? Just a little bit. I didn't give you as much as these guys. I just gave you a little bit. What'd you do with it? Well, I knew you were angry and you're a hard man and you always get money from where you didn't put money and all this stuff. So I went and I dug a hole and I went and he goes, digs it up and throws it at his feet and goes, here, it's yours. Have it back. I don't want it. Take that load off my shoulders. I don't want the responsibility anymore. And the king looked at his servant and said, you wicked servant, you should have at least put it in the bank so I could have gotten interest back on it. Take that talent, give it to the guy who's got the most, and what I want you to do is take him, bind him hand and foot, and cast him outside where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. Sound familiar? Weeping, gnashing of teeth? Sound like anything? For whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. Don't you get it? The religious people, and now Judas Iscariot is lumped into that group. They despised Jesus. They despised him. For this reason. He was the one people honored. Jesus was the one people loved. Jesus was the one people gave dinners for. Jesus was the one who could do the impossible. Jesus was the one that they hung on his every word. Jesus was the one they followed everywhere. Didn't matter where he went. He is the one they served. He's the one they gave everything to. He's the one they gave up everything for. Jesus was. He was the one they gave everything for. As we see with Mary. And they despised the people that he had raised from the dead because they were proof positive that he deserved all of it. That's what really put the salt in the wound. They despised the people that hung out with Jesus because they had been raised from the dead. They were dead before, they were blind before, they were lame and couldn't walk before, they were deaf and couldn't hear before, they were prostitutes before, they were drug addicts before, they were conspiracy theorists before, they were whacked out. They were the bottom on the food chain. They were the crazy people. They were the people that nobody wanted anything to do with. They were the dead people. And Jesus came and he spoke life. He called them by name. He chose them. He gave them his life because they gave up everything for him. They gave up everything. They left everything to follow Jesus. And they hated the people that were around Jesus. Look, verse 7. Then said Jesus, "Leave her alone." So he tells Joseph or Judas, "Hey, back off. She's done this. She's done this in preparing me for the day I'm going to be buried." Again, reminding them that he was going to die, that he had to die. But then he says something else very interesting. Verse 8. "For the poor always you have with you, but me you have not always." Spiritually bankrupt people are going to be around you the rest of your life. Black holes. You could dump all the money you want, all the love you want, all the care, compassion, concern, clothing, food, housing, everything you want into these people, and they're always going to be there, because Jesus said, they're always going to be there. You'll never get rid of them. You'll never solve poverty. Even if you sold that stuff, everybody sold it for $30,000 and you had billions or trillions of dollars and you give it all to them, that's not going to solve anything. They're always going to be with you. But again, Judas and the religious people, that whole group, they despised Jesus because he was the center of attention. He was the one they worshipped. He was the one they followed. He's the one they went to when they needed help. They didn't go to the temple anymore. They didn't go to the Pharisees or the scribes or the religious leaders. They didn't go to the government anymore to help them. They didn't go check their P.O. boxes for their checks on the 1st and the 15th. They went to Jesus because they gave that all up. They gave it to Jesus. It's all yours now. Everything's yours. My life is yours. It was ridiculous. It was totally ridiculous. They gave it all up and they gave it to Jesus. They poured it all out on his feet. Oh, I should have put it on his head at least. And it humbles you. When you give everything up, you're humbled. And you're on your knees. And you find yourself doing something even more ridiculous now, where you're taking your hair and you're wiping his feet with your hair. But I love what Jesus said. You know what? You give everything up, yeah, it's going to cost you everything. But Jesus said, if you seek to save your life, you're going to lose it. But if you lose your life for my sake and the gospel, guess what? You're going to find it. Give everything up, you're going to find life. Give it all to Jesus, pour it out all on his feet, you're going to find life, real life. Jesus said it in John 10:10, "I've come that they might have life and have that more abundantly." That's why he came. "I've come that you might have life." My life, Jesus says. So give up your life or what you think is your life. Pour it out on me. Give it all to me. and I'll pour my life into you. Yeah, people are going to talk smack if you do that. They will. I guarantee you, 100%. Religious people, popular people, they're going to talk smack when you give everything up and you follow Jesus. But check this out. I love it. What does Jesus say? Too bad, so sad. It's going to happen to the best of us or the worst of us. Man, you got grilled. He doesn't say that. It totally encouraged me last night when I was reading it. Jesus said, and he looks at Judas and he says, hey, you leave her alone. Back off. Because she's done this for me. I am the center of attention. I deserve everything. I had to write this down because I was just like, I had this thought. Uh-oh, hold on a second. See, it's the first time I've climbed down teaching, and it's the first time I've used notes too. But I had to write this down because I didn't want to forget it. Nothing, listen to this, nothing. Think of everything that you think is so precious to you. Nothing was too precious that couldn't be poured out upon him. What is it that you hold on to that's so precious to you that you think is going to give you some meaning in life? The longer you hold on to it, the tighter your grip gets. Guess what's going to happen? That snake's going to turn around and bite you. And it's going to kill you. You seek to save your life, cling to your life, what you think is yours. Guess what's going to happen? It's going to be the death of you. But you let go of it, and you give it to God, you follow, you do what He says, and you give up everything, that's when you're going to find it. You're going to find life like you can't even believe. As different as if you were born blind, and now you can see. Whoa, this is what grass looks like? Whoa, and you're touching it, man, it's green. What is this? Green. Wow, it's green. Wow, look at it. Whoa, look at the sky. What color is that? It's blue. Oh, blue. Wow, what color is this? It's white. Oh, white, yeah, oh. Wow, that's like the opposite of dark. It's like it was light and dark, and I couldn't see when I was in the dark, and now I can see in the light. Oh, is that the sun? Oh, man, the sun's... Oh, don't stare at the sun. It hurts my eyes. Yeah, don't look at it too long. You can't do that. You'll go blind again. Oh, I don't want to do that. I got sight. You mean I can't look at the sun? Never thought about that? I just thought about it. You have sight. And you walk around with sight, you've been given sight. Go stare at the sun all day. And then let it go down, and I'll light your bell. Oh! Wake up the next morning, go up there and stare at the sun again. What's going to happen? You go blind. There's certain things you can't do if you've been given sight. It's like telling someone who's been given their sight, hey, don't look at the sun, you'll lose your sight. Oh yeah, well who are you to tell me? Put your rules on me, man. I'll look at the sun if I want to. I ain't hurting nobody. Go ahead. God gives us little rules and regulations, commandments. If you love me, you'll do what I command you. You'll do what I ask you to do. Why? Because Jesus is a killjoy? Oh, this ain't no fun. Can't stare at the sun all day. The poor you're always going to have with you. Spiritually bankrupt people are going to be around you till the day you die. But Jesus says, I'm not always going to be with you. I'm not always available. There's going to come a point in time when you're not going to be able to pour everything out. There's going to be a day when you're not going to be able to pour everything out upon me. Verse 9. Much people of the Jews, therefore, knew that he was there. Of course they did. Everybody knew Jesus was there. And they came, not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. If you've been raised from the dead, if you've given everything, if you've paid that costly price of humbling yourself under the mighty hand of God, putting yourself under His authority, if you've done that, people are going to come, not just for Jesus' sake, but they're going to want to come and see the guy who was dead, the girl who was dead, who's now living. The person who hated God before, and now they walk with God. They were God's enemy, now they're His friend. He was Mr. Lone Ranger, Mr. Independent, Mr. Strong-willed, stubborn, prideful. And now he's submissive, humble, meek, filled with the Spirit, walking with Jesus. People are going to want to come and check that out. Not just for Jesus' sake, they're going to come and check it out. Hey, is it really true? I heard it was true. And did you really die? What was that like? When He called your name and you came hopping out of the tomb. How do you really know you were dead, Lazarus? How do you really know that you were dead? What if you just kind of fell asleep for a couple days? People are going to come, not just for Jesus' sake, but if you're claiming to walk with Jesus, they're going to come, they're going to watch your life. Someone said a long time ago, get on fire for Jesus or get on fire for God and people will come and watch you burn. I was reading in the paper this morning or last night or yesterday about there's a couple of houses over on Date Street. The fire department's going to burn down. Like training. The places that are condemned, they got to burn them down. And I was thinking, when that happens, just watch. Because the traffic's going to be backed up for blocks and blocks and blocks. Because people are going to be driving over there and want to see. If people do that for fires and there's burning a couple of bombed out houses on Date Street, what do you think it's going to be like if you're on fire? Think people are going to just go, oh, whatever. No, they're going to come, they're going to watch. They're going to go, whoa, what is that? I don't know, man, that guy's on fire over there. Oh, let's go watch. Get on fire for God, people come watch you burn. They're going to watch. Verse 10. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death. Not just Jesus. Hey, let's kill Lazarus too. Why? Verse 11 tells us. Because that by reason of him, many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus. Man, Lazarus is really alive. He was really dead. And he's really alive. And they went away. They went away. And what was the result of seeing this person whom Jesus had made alive? What was the result? They went away. They came dead to see the guy who was dead, and they went away believing. They went away living. The religious people, Judas Iscariot, they went, they had this little meetings, and they made up in their minds, we got to kill him. They despised the people Jesus had raised from the dead because of this reason and this reason alone. Those dead people who are now alive, they are proof positive of one thing, that Jesus does deserve exactly what this chapter shows us. All of the attention, all of the honor, all of the worship, all of the sacrifice, all the surrender. He deserves that and indescribably more. I can never pay God back for what He's done for me. I can't. If I stand here every single day of the week, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, till I'm 90 years old, and I die and fall out of this thing, and the whole time just preach God's Word, and just allow God to speak through me, that's not even spit in the ocean. It's not even spit in the universe of paying God back. I can't. Nothing you ever do was going to pay God back. Because the debt that you owed God, this is the thing. I look at these guys, they want to kill not just Jesus, they want to kill Lazarus too. Because he's proof positive that Jesus is who he says he is. I don't know if it's like the right thought to end on, but all I can think of, and all it makes me think of, is the utter depravity of your heart and mind and mine. Oh, I could never do that, or I'd never do this. Well, then you've never really seen yourself for who you really are. To think that you wouldn't go to the extreme of killing somebody. If you think that you're not capable, and it's in your heart that you would never kill somebody, you don't know yourself and you've never seen yourself. Because Jesus said it, you've heard it said of those of old, you should not kill. But I tell you, if you're even angry with a person, you're already guilty of murder. You're guilty of murder. Because it starts in your heart. It's not your actions. It's not what you do. Just like doing stuff for God is not going to save you, going out and actually killing somebody doesn't make you a murderer. It starts right here. You're already a murderer before you go out and do it. That's the way God looks at it. Not man, God. You're angry with somebody, you just get ticked off, incensed, rage. God looks at that and says, you're a murderer. Because that hate you have in your heart, you just murdered that person. Whoever it's directed towards, you just murdered them. God told the prophet Jeremiah, or spoke through the prophet Jeremiah, and gave us all His estimation of our hearts. When He says the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked above all else, who can know it? Your heart lies to you. So if you think you can't do it, you're wrong. Your heart's lying to you. And it is not just deceitful, it is wicked. But not just wicked, it's desperately wicked. You ever seen a desperate person? You ever been desperate? For anything? When you're really desperate for something, you don't care. Just like we saw the opposite side of the coin, where Mary was so desperate to show Jesus her love, she didn't care about anything else or anyone else around her. Everything she had, she took it and gave it all to Him. Literally. And so He says, who can know it? Who can know their own heart? Kind of a rhetorical question. You can't know your own heart. You cannot know the depth of what you're capable of apart from me, God says. But the very next verse, He says, I, the Lord, test the hearts. God looks at your heart. God is concerned about the state of your heart. He doesn't give a rip about your pocketbook, or even if you have a pocketbook. He doesn't care. That's nothing. The Bible tells us the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. So what? What does God need? Paul said in Acts, God doesn't need you. God doesn't need me. As if you were served by human hands. God needs nothing from us. But He wants something from you. He needs nothing from you. He is not dependent upon you. If you believe in God and give Him everything else, He hasn't gained anything. And if you turn your back on Him and spit in His face and turn your back on Him and walk away, He hasn't lost anything. God needs nothing from any of us, but He does want something from us. He wants, as He shows Himself to us, He wants God wants your love. God wants you to choose Him. That's why you're here. That's why you're alive today. That's it. There's no other reason on this earth why you are alive. God created you. God put you together in your mother's womb. You and I, none of us, chose our parents. God gave you the life you have for one reason and one reason only. That you would respond. It's almost as if God loved you so much, He had to make you. Knowing that you would spit in His face day after day. Knowing that you would pilfer your what you thought was yours, or you knew it was God's, but you used it for yourself. Just like Judas. Knowing that you and I would all be thieves, He had to make us because He was so desperate in wanting and desiring you to someday stop, throw down your arms, throw up your arms. Okay, two different kinds of arms there. Throw down your arms and throw up your arms. I give up. I give up. I'm dying. I'm already dead. That's what Paul says in his word. You who are dead in your trespasses and sins. You know what trespassing is, right? Oh, no I don't, Josh. Yes, you do. We all do. We think it's funny to trespass and, hey, take my picture next to the sign. No trespassing. Oh, yeah, what are you going to do? No one saw me. I got away with it. No, you trespass one time, you overstep those boundaries God set. Like, don't stare at the sun. Overstep that one time. And what happens? You're dead. God loves you, each and every single one of you, individually, so much that He had to make you with the hopes. And He just waits. And He waits. And He waits. And He waits. And He calls to you. And He... I mean, it's crazy, you guys. Think about it. I think about it all the time. Because I'm the guy that does it. What kind of a freak, seriously, I'm not talking about myself here, I'm not here right now. What kind of a freak stands up on a ladder in a park and talks to people? Man, you ain't talking, man, you yelling. What are you doing talking about? I try my hardest not to stand up here and give you my opinion. All I do is what God asked me to do. Hey, I want you to get up and declare my word to them. And I don't care, I told him again this morning. It doesn't matter if nobody shows up. I'm still going to be here. I'm not here primarily for you. I do this because God asked me to. Yes, I do come, and I can't even thank God enough when you guys do show up week after week. It blows my mind. But, think about it. God calls out to you, and I'm sure it's most of you guys go to the feed on Thursday nights. I'm sure somebody stands up and says something about how God wants to have a relationship with you. More food, please. Later. What are you having tonight? Ugh, sick. I ain't eating. I'm out of here. What was once a need or a thankfulness of like, oh, man, thanks. I'm hungry. The next time you show up, you're kind of like, oh, man, we had this last time. This was pretty good. And you show up again the third time, the fourth time, or the 27th time, and you go, man, this stuff again, man, this is sick. I didn't hear this guy. Get out of here. I just show up on Christmas or Thanksgiving because I want a sleeping bag. That's it. You know what I mean? You guys know what I'm talking about. Ain't nothing new. We all do it. You're not alone. I'm not pointing you out individually. It's all of us. That's what I'm talking about. We're all thieves. We don't give a rip about what people give us. God made you for one single reason. If you never remember anything I ever say through all eternity, whether you're in heaven or in hell, I want you to remember one thing. God made you on purpose. For a purpose. And the purpose is to respond to Him. That's it. That's bottom line. There's no other reason to live. And if you haven't responded, you're not living. But God's waiting. Think about it. You're keeping God waiting. God waits on you hand and foot. You don't believe me? You think I'm just making that up? Trying to whatever? No. Philippians tells us, Paul said, let this mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus, who though being in the form of God, who consider it robbery not to be equal with God, because He was God, He humbled Himself, which boggles my mind, He humbled Himself and became obedient. He took upon Himself the form of a servant. And He came down here and He washes your feet. He takes the lowest job on the totem pole while you just sit there. And He comes to you and He washes your feet and He washes you with the Word. And He washes you and He says, have you seen what I've done to you? Do you get it yet? Do you get what's going on? Do you get the picture? I'm serving you. Do you get the picture? I'm washing you. Do you get the picture? I want you to be a part of me. I don't want you just to say it. I want to revolutionize. I want to do away with the old. I want new. I want my life in you. Because there's all those other people around you that need me. So you're going to continue to be a thief and be selfish and use what I've given you for your own pleasures? Man, God help you. God help all of us. That we're going to stand before Him someday and say, yeah, I was a thief, so what? I'll guarantee you, you ain't going to have any sarcasm in your voice when you stand before Him, whose eyes burn like fire, and His face shines like the sun in its strength, and you will have to stare at the sun that day. You'll be commanded to. You won't be able not to. And He's going to ask you point blank, what did you do with what I gave you? Choice after choice, I waited, I outstretched my arms, I called to you, what'd you do with it? You're not going to wave, you're not going to give them the back of the hand, you're not going to say talk to the hand, you're not going to be doing it, you're going to be on your face, weeping, pleading. Too late. Too late, too late, too late, too late. No hope. Hope does come to an end. Mercy does come to an end. Grace comes to an end. The day you stand before Him, that stuff stops. It's given once for a man to die. After this comes the judgment. What's there to judge? What'd you do with what I gave you? I gave you a choice. What'd you do with it? You squander it away on yourself? Or did you give that broken vessel? Did you give that broken vessel to me? Did you let me do the impossible in you and do the impossible through you? Did you notice what happened to Mary? Did you notice what happened to Mary afterwards? Well, the Bible doesn't really say. All we know is that what she poured out on Jesus came back on her. So when she walked away smelling just like Jesus. Her hair was saturated with it. Her clothes were permeated with it. Her skin was absorbed with it. The very thing she poured out on Jesus, Jesus, in a manner of speaking, poured back out on her. Interesting. Father, Lord, I ask that your Spirit would just do that work that only He can do in helping us to understand, in speaking to us, in helping us to die, give up, to pour it out, everything. Lord, I don't want to hold anything back from you. Because when I see you as who you are, when I see you as how faithful you are, God, how powerful you really are, how righteous you really are, how holy you are, and the great love that you have for me, God. I can't, Lord, I don't want to hold anything back, Lord, and yet I find myself doing that sometimes. Forgive me, God. Lord, I don't want one fist in the gold and one fist in the gutter. Lord, I want to let go of everything, gutter and gold, so that I can cling to you, so I can follow after you. Lord, that not just myself, but that would be many others, Lord, that would follow you wherever you go and minister to you out of our substance, of our very livelihood. Help us to not be afraid to be ridiculous for you. Help us to hold nothing back. And Lord, would you just do the impossible in us and through us as only you can do. Pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen.